apologize that our chairperson was not able to join us today because she had a prior engagement. She actually flew out of the country, I think, yesterday evening. And myself, Susan Zimela, CEO of SAA, and then to my right is Fanny Zulu, who is our head of communication. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, I think we also need to introduce ourselves, starting from you.
Gerard Koornhof, member of the Portfolio Committee.
I'm Gloria Bullman, member of this committee.
My name is Aubrey Mukwena, member of this Portfolio Committee.
Rose Sonda, member of the committee.
Alan Training, member of the committee.
Dyke, member of the committee. Peter van Dalen, also a member of this committee.
Lindy Nana, member of the committee.
Thank you, honorable members. I think, Bisang, can you give us the apologies?
Good afternoon. We've received apologies from Mr. Nonko Nyana, who is attending the International IT Conference that Parliament is hosting. Ms. Mente is attending the information, protection of information bill. Ms. Ajit is going to Turkey as we speak, and Mr. Rikova has got a bereavement. Thank you.
Thank you, Sam. Honorable Santo?
Chairperson, on introductions, there are other people that are in the room. They should also introduce themselves.
The officials of the department.
Good afternoon. It's Colin Craver, public enterprise.
Sam Madwana, DPE.
I see there are other people in the house. Can you introduce
yourself? From PMG.
Oh, from PMG.
Yeah.
Over there, at the corner. Okay. Thank you very much. Honorable members, we've got some in-house matters that we need to... We've got a program in front of us that we need to adopt. I mean, a program that we need to adopt. If you check on your program there, the report back of the task team on the funding solutions regarding the Transnet Second Defined Benefit Fund and the way forward. Actually, we need to change that date to the 2nd of November. Is there any mover to that point?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I move that we do that. Thank you.
Any seconder? Okay. Honorable Koronov, thank you very much for that. We can then adopt the whole program, honorable members, as a whole, because these were the only changes to the program that we have before us. Is there any mover to the adoption of the program of the whole, honorable members? Any seconder? Honorable Nana, okay. Thank you. The time allocated for this presentation, I think it would be 2 hours, because I see it's a very, very small presentation. Without any waste of time, I would want to give the CEO the opportunity to present the report. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Amin Chair. The way in which we're going to handle the presentation this afternoon is that I am going to go over just some of the highlights and challenges, and then pass it over to my colleague here to go through the details of the income and balance sheet statement. And then I think I will then end off by just talking through some of the issues that we're looking to implement going forward within SAA.
How many minutes are going to take?
To be honest, I think that we are probably going to get through this in 30 minutes, if not less. And I think we've left more than enough time for questions. Yeah.
Over to you.
I think just starting off in terms of the report that we'll be delivering today is just to set the tone by saying that what we actually witnessed in this last financial year was probably, the biggest or deepest recession since 1930. And the downturn affected all airlines, including SAA. And in this context, we witnessed a number of airlines grounding their aircraft in all the various continents of the world. We saw Delta, Lufthansa, Qantas in Singapore grounding their aircraft during this period. I think SAA was quite fortunate to have found itself not in a position where they were forced to ground their aircraft during this period, but they also had to then just respond to what was actually happening in the environment by shifting some of the capacity from areas where there was less requirement for it to more of the areas that required additional capacity. What we also saw as an airline industry is that there was a downward pressure on average fares, and that the traveling public responded to the recession by either reducing their travel. And for those that continue to travel, what we saw them do is a shift from business class to economy class. So clearly, what we witnessed was also a move from premium air carriers, to low-cost carriers, as a response from the traveling public to the recession. In addition to all of the other challenges that airlines in general experienced, I think SAA also found itself with additional challenges, internal challenges. And I think those are widely known already, to the members of this committee, and specifically relating to the corporate governance issues that came under a huge spotlight in the last financial year. Additionally, we also saw an increase of competition on our regional routes, not only from the African airlines, but also from other international airlines looking for new markets on the continent, in response to, as I say, the requirement for them to actually ground the aircraft, which was something that they preferred not to do. So what did that result in? For SAA, we flew 6.7 million passengers in the last financial year, as compared to the previous financial year where we flew 6.8 million passengers. So that converts to a 2.5% year-on-year decrease in passenger numbers. And we saw our passenger load factor drop from 73% in the previous financial year to 71% in this last financial year. But as I have already indicated, I think we were quite fortunate that we did not find ourselves with the requirement to reduce capacity. But what we did do is that we moved some of the capacity from the domestic market into the regional market in order to respond to what was happening in the marketplace. From a cargo perspective, we also saw a decline in the cargo that was carried, where in the previous financial year we carried 138,000 tons. In this last financial year, we found ourselves carrying 119,000 tons of cargo, which was a 14% year-on-year decrease. However, again, in this respect, we believe that SAA fared much better than industry norms, because I think that if we looked generally in the industry, figures were better around of between 20 to 40% decline in cargo. The Africa routes remained our most profitable market segment. Whilst we saw a 6% decrease in domestic passenger numbers and a 5% decrease in international passenger numbers, we recorded a 9% increase in regional passenger numbers in this last financial year. That all converted to a turnover of 23.3 billion. In this last financial year, in comparison to the previous year, where we recorded 26 billion in the year 09-10. And the main elements that made that up, or the main contributors, was the passenger revenue, which accounted for 14.6 billion, and cargo, which accounted for 1.2 billion. The operating costs equally declined, where we saw a decline from 24.5 billion in 08-09 to 21 billion in 09-10. And the most significant contributor to the decline was the fuel cost decline, the fuel cost declined by 3.4 billion, and the aircraft lease cost that decreased by 643 million or 30% to 1.6 billion in this last financial year. All of this resulted in the group being in a very fortunate position to record a group pre-tax profit of 596 million in comparison to the previous year where we had recorded a 424 million in pre-group profits. I think what is also significant in this last year is that when we look at the subsidiaries and what their contribution was to the overall group figure, AirChef contributed at 35.5 million pre-tax profits, I mean, to that overall group figure. Mango, 18.5 million. SA Technical, 9.6 million. And SA Travel Center just broke even with a 1 million rand loss. So as I said, I think that we were actually quite fortunate to have found ourselves in a position to report overall positive results. I think what also needs to be mentioned is that some of the significant improvements were also in the area of hedging losses, where we saw a huge turnaround, where having applied a new hedging policy in the last financial year, we recorded 120 million loss in hedging for this last financial year in comparison to 1 billion loss in the previous year. And I think further we'll talk about that, because even the 120 million loss is not really a true loss, but I think I'll allow my colleague just to talk through that in terms of what made up, I mean, that 120 million loss. We also recorded a significant increase in cash generated from operations, where in this last financial year, we recorded a 1.7 billion for the year, in comparison to the previous year's deficit of 1.8 billion. This also resulted in improvement in equity, and as a result of that, we were able to repay 1.5 equity, or to repay the 1.5 billion subordinated loan by making the payments of 1.5 billion. The repayment will also help us going forward, because essentially what it does is that it helps us to reduce the interest payment that is required against that subordinated loan, and it also improves our capital structure going forward. A key issue to note as well, which we think, I mean, will augur very well for going forward, was that we're able to also resolve the Airbus A320 transaction. I think the members will be familiar with the fact that for a number of years there was, I mean, a dispute going back and forth between SAA and Airbus on whether we had actually committed to this transaction or not. And I think we were happy that at the end of the financial, this last financial year, we resolved the matter and received all the necessary approvals to be able to start receiving some of these aircraft starting from the year 2013 up to 2015. Another matter, I mean, which is of significant importance, especially, I mean, as an airline, is an operational indicator, which indicates, I mean, how we're performing. And I think as SAA, we're quite proud that we took the, not only the number one spot, but the number two spot in terms of on-time performance. Number one was taken by Mango, and number two by SAA, with an on-time performance of 85%. I would like to then just stop here and ask, I mean, Fiona just to go into the details of the income statement and the balance sheet, and then I will just end off by talking through some of the issues that we'll be looking to implement going forward, or what our focus areas are going to be going into the future.
Thank you, Madam CEO. Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee.
Members, are you? Are there any follow-up questions? Over to you.
Thank you. Just taking you through the income statement, our airline income fell by 15% from the 26.4 billion to 22.3 billion. And this is largely attributable to the 12% decrease in average fares and also 2% decline in passenger numbers. Also attributable to that is the strengthening of the rand from 8.84 to 7.99. Operating costs declined by 13%, from 24.5 billion to 21 billion. 60 to 70% of the activity costs was managed down. 30 to 40% being fixed costs didn't come down as fast as the revenues did. Cost containment was driven quite significantly in the last year, especially following the restructuring program that we've had. And bearing in mind the rand-dollar strengthening, seeing that 57% of our cost is foreign-based, it would also reduce significantly. Looking at the operating profit, this showed 626 million compared to 334 million in 2009. SAA's financial position continued to strengthen, looking at the 596 million pre-tax profit at group level and the 424 million in 2009. major drivers, as the CEO has discussed earlier, was largely attributable to the 3.5 billion decrease in fuel costs. Aircraft lease costs decreased by 30% from 2.3 to 1.6 billion, as well as staff costs stayed within acceptable parameters. The improvements in hedging losses further contributed to the bottom line in that it decreased from 1 billion to 120 million, being an 88% decline. And this is due to the hedging policy that we've adopted. 40 to 60% of our fuel is hedged 12 months out, with a minimum 50 to 75% maximum on the currency. Going to the balance sheet, we had a subordinated loan from the government, 1.5 billion, which was settled through the capital injection received from the government, which brought the equity position to 1.004 billion when compared to the 734 million last year. The net asset value thereby increased by 308 million. We still do have another subordinated loan from the government, being 1.3 billion. Going on to the cash flow, we had 1.7 billion cash generated from operations compared to a deficit of 1.8 billion last year. Net cash inflow from operating activities increased to 1.4 billion from a deficit position in 2009 of 384 million. With the repayment of a part of the government loan as discussed under the balance sheet, the net cash from financing activities declined to a deficit of 1.5 billion. SAA's cash position has decreased from 3.8 to 3.4 billion, but still quite healthy. Okay, that's the high level of the statement position.
I think looking forward, SAA has now then identified, I mean, five primary objectives that we would want to actually focus on. The first one is that we understand that we do need to continue to generate sustainable earnings. And in order to do this, we're looking at increasing frequency on existing profitable routes. We're also looking for new partnerships in Central and West Africa with the focus of actually growing our presence into the region. And we want to also maximize our alliance relationship, I mean, internationally. We don't have the capability in terms of aircraft to be able to grow to any new routes internationally, but we think that we can do much more in terms of utilizing the alliance relationships that are in place, I mean, right now. And we understand that we need to do all of these things in order to restore the balance sheet, which is absolutely critical in order for us to be able to raise the financing for the Airbus transaction. We talk about the aircraft that we need to start we take delivery of from starting from 2013 to 2015, and I think it would be common knowledge, I believe, that we have been told by the shareholder quite categorically that we need to actually raise the financing of those aircraft in the absence of any government support. And we've taken that challenge on board, and we are essentially working towards raising that finance without the requirement for any further government guarantee. I think we are comforted by the fact that so far, in terms of just testing the market to see whether there are people who would begin to proceed in this manner, initial indications indicate that indeed there would be people who are keen to support us with the financing of the transaction, provided that we're able to sustain our profits in the manner that we have in the last, 2 years. So it's quite critical for us to continue to make sure that we remain sustainable. In doing that, we're not going to ignore the fact that we have to try and improve our service of quality, or rather to build on consistently offering a high quality service, because we do believe that we offer a good service, and sometimes the challenges are more in the consistency as opposed to not providing a good service. In that respect, we're also excited about the fact that we are going to start swapping out of our slightly older aircraft in order to remain competitive with some of our competitors on the route. For example, we are taking delivery of A330-200s shortly in order to replace some of the older aircraft that we operate, or rather the second frequency that we operate to London, which we have found to be and not competitive in terms of what the competitors are offering on the route. We are also reviewing our Voyager offering and ensuring that we go back and to the basics and understand why we had actually put the program in place in the first place, which was really just to provide a benefit to our customers and to retain the customers within the SAA fold. All of this, I mean, have to be driven by a change of culture and the way we do business in the organization. And to that end, we are going to be driving quite hard a performance-driven organization, and we understand that this relates, I mean, to people and ensuring that every single person in the organization has some KPI that they're working towards and everybody understands what their contribution is to the overall bottom line. We are also going to be increasing our training. I think in the past we also had a challenge where as we needed to cut down on cost, we started cutting down on training. We're very clear that that's not going to be the case going forward. Last but not least, I think which is quite important, I mean, to everyone, is that we acknowledge that we need to enhance our corporate governance environment, and we're working quite hard to ensure that we get rid of all of the historical matters in the system and focus on putting proper systems and processes in place going forward. I think that in trying to deliver on all of the above key objectives, we are also going to be taking a group approach. And by this, what I mean is that we have had subsidiaries, and as we all know, I mean, within SAA, but we probably have not fully utilized the use of our subsidiaries in trying to support the strategy that we have. So in terms of AirChef, and you would see that AirChef was able to contribute $35.5 million to our overall profit in the last financial year, we think that we do still have the potential to actually develop this area even further and to continue to restructure AirChef through critical investment and improve the efficiencies and profitability of this entity. We see also opportunities to utilize both AirChef and SA Technical as strategically in terms of growing into the region. I think that we'd also always taken a view that all of these entities should follow the passenger side, but we are actually finding more and more that there may be opportunities to allow both AirChef and SA Technical to provide services more broadly into the region, even prior to the passenger side being part of that transaction. With SA Technical, we think that there is still a huge amount of growth that we have not capitalized on, and therefore we are seriously trying to grow our share of the MRO market in the continent, and we believe that with all these steps, we will be able to further improve our profitability. In terms of Mango, it's also about ensuring that we fully utilize all of the assets that we have within the group, and we don't find ourselves duplicating efforts and therefore either resulting in net losses, I mean, for both the carriers, or not effectively using our resources. As indicated, we understand that we are challenged in terms of having the ability to continuously bring additional aircraft into our system. So therefore, we're going to have to be a lot smarter in how we use what we have within the overall group to ensure that we improve on the offering to the passengers, but also helping us to grow. Because if we are not growing as an airline, we are definitely falling behind. And in no time, we will have disappeared from the horizon. That is it, and would like to stop here and take any questions.
Thank you very much, CEO. That brings to the end the presentation from SAA. I'll now invite questions, comments, subtractions from honorable members.
Chair, I just on a point of clarity, if with the explanation, they could just explain to me just quickly the difference between the group and the company, because I get a little confused with that. Please, just I need to understand it a little.
Basically, I mean, there's SAA, which is basically the passenger side, which is all the various divisions within SAA, which would be the passenger side plus the cargo side that falls under SAA. When we talk about group, we're now including Mango, SATC, and SAT, because those are standalone subsidiaries of the organization right now, and AirChef. So those are the four subsidiaries that we have. So when we talk about group, we're talking about all of those entities.
Okay, so if if I'm correct, and this is just as a point of clarity, if you go to page number 36 and you look at the profit for the year, and you see that the group, as which you are reporting on, has made a profit of 581, and the company has made a profit of 697, then somewhere there should have been a loss in one of the entities, although you are saying all of them made a profit. So can you just explain that difference? I don't understand that. Do you understand?
Sorry, Honorable Van Dalen, are you asking a question?
No. It's a point of clarity.
Oh.
I need to understand it to, yeah.
Okay, you've quoted 581 versus 697. There was, some of the companies did make a bottom line loss, but when consolidated, which means cargo and the company, together with the 35 from AirShift and technical as well. When consolidated, the net effect is the 581 from the group. And remember, there are consolidating entries between the two as well.
Okay, I understand that, but then you are only reporting on the companies that made a profit and you leave out the companies that made a loss.
No.
I mean, isn't that...
No, it's all consolidated into the group.
Yeah, but all the group is this part which you have reported on. They all made a profit. So I don't understand why how that could be a difference in price. Then somewhere there must have been a loss. If you understand what I'm saying, I just need to understand that as a point of clarity.
The one that you just presented was.
Are you looking at our presentation or you're looking at the annual report?
I'm looking at both.
Okay.
You are reporting here that all the companies have made a profit.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the group.
Yes.
So if all the companies have made a profit, why is there a difference between the group's profit and the company profit?
But remember, there's, if you've got to look at the...
If somebody made a loss, then you should report it under there, then we would add them up, or, and then we will see where the 100 million went.
Of the presentation, but you've got to read the income statement from the top down, and that's where the entries are deferring.
So that is why I don't understand it. If you are only reporting on, and you say, well, we only report on the companies that made a profit, then I understand it. But if you, and then you don't report on the ones that made the loss, then I understand it. But, I don't know if anybody else understands it.
Can I please, clarify, which is why I mean to make the point that maybe you need to look at it from the top to the bottom. What we're reporting on is pre-tax profits for all of the entities, okay? And that figure that we reported up there is an overall pre-tax profit. If you then look at the detail in terms of the statements of comprehensive income, and you look at each of the various lines, you'll see that some lines are fair value adjustments and so forth. So there would be differences. That 581 would be there more or less the net.
You're comparing
the net figure to a pre-tax figure. So that's where the differences are.
No, it can't be that. I mean, your explanation... Note, water, because they're next to each other. It's not the one underneath where the taxes is off. It's next to each other. It's this one here and that one there. The one is the profit. The company is making a 697 million rand profit, and the group has made a 581. So somewhere there must be some losses. Or just do I just understand it wrong? I mean, if you say these have made a profit, then there should be no losses anywhere. Then those amounts should be the same.
If you look at the operating profit, 626 versus the 636, you're taking into account your investment income adjustments as well.
Can I come in there?
Yes.
I think that question will be the last one. Can I take the first round of questions here? And then we'll deal with that question later, in the interest of time. I recognize Honorable Colin North, number one. Number two, Honorable Bowman. Honorable Mkwena. Honorable Santo. Honorable Khrailen. Honorable Van Dalen, and then the last one will be Honorable Nana, on that order.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the CEO and the team for the presentation. Can I start with the first question? the layout of your annual report this year, it doesn't compare your achievements against your targets. You have a strategic plan of SAA. What is the reason why you don't report to Parliament in your annual report your achievements against your targets? Mostly, this I think it's a prescription from the National Treasury. I just want to have a reason for that. Then on your auditor's general's your auditor's report on page 21, there are at least seven issues, quite serious issues as emphasis of matter. Can you tell the committee what progress you've made to solve these issues and what steps you've taken to prevent that from happening again in the future? And my last question, the most serious one, is on your director's report on page 24. You very correctly state the critical issues facing the airline, and they are serious issue. It's a bit disturbing if you look in that particular financial year that we are reviewing now, and it was before your time, but the issues you raise here is quite serious. One issue, for instance, is the Airbus 320 order. You made a decision in 2004 to cancel the purchase, and then you decided through negotiation to increase it from 15 aircraft to 20 aircraft, but at the same price. Maybe you can explain. And in addition, to lease another six aircraft. Another example in this critical issues is the FIFA World Cup ticket pricing complaint. Can you just give the update about the outcome of that in the previous report? And then some of the litigation cases. It is not good reading. Litigation in the U.S., the anti-competitive conduct in the EU, the KPMG investigation that we know of, and a number of others, the competition tribunal, antitrust legislation, not to talk about the breaches of the PFMA, Section 51 specifically, and also you couldn't to claim full compliance with various other sections of the PFMA. Breaches of the Companies Act. I mean, it doesn't make good reading for the annual report that you present today before Parliament. Maybe you can just explain. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Colonel, Honourable Bowman.
Thank you, Chairperson. Okay. Let me start just to lead off from the FIFA tickets. I just want to refer to the attachment that we got in our report, which was indicating your spend on the FIFA World Cup. And it all seems to be apparel. What was the ticket component, spent on the World Cup? Were there any tickets bought by SAA for customers or, to do that relationship thing that business people do? Because all that we have in that attachment is all related to apparel, 3-point-something billion rand. The other thing I would like to pick up on, I think I want to pick up on the cancellation of the flights from Durban, Kinshasa, to Cape Town. We're a national carrier. Durban, Cape Town, Johannesburg, part of the Golden Triangle. Now we're taking away a leg here. Now I'm very understanding of the restructuring and of the business component, because we're all shouting about that. We want the SOEs to be viable and standing on their own feet and all of that sort of thing. But I think there's a process here that the communication has not been very good. And I think we're now looking, we've just got a brand new international airport in Durban. It's a wonderful place. there's a lot of money there. And now, you know, we're taking off this flat. Now, from what I can read, and I'm surprised that we had to pick it up in the newspaper, but from what I read, it's to do with the, and you have already alluded to this, that with the downturn in the economy, people are reducing, you know, they're not going business class, they're trapping economy and all of that. Now, I understand all of that. Now, do we have to pull all six flights off, you know, to Durban? Can that not be at a reduced rate, perhaps, flying, taking off those that are not? And perhaps my question at the end of this big diatribe would be to say to you, can we have, if there's a cost implication here, and it's economically not viable to fly these flights, and I understand your position of going into Africa, you know, to the region, because that is profitable, do we need to cancel everything? And the other thing to ask is, what is the cost factor here that has led you to actually take back those flights off? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Foreman. Honourable Mkwena.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. firstly, to welcome the new CEO. It's a breath of fresh air. Lady Njumela, she's very accountable with the board. In the past, one did not enjoy such accessibility and accountability. And we know her track record in SA Express. And when she comes up to SA, one thing is detect some optimism that together with the new board, they're pulling SA out of the quagmire into which it was sunk by the previous board and the CEO and all that. Now, that is just to preface my question. That's number one. Number two, or actually number one, that's just a general comment, Chairperson, quickly. The one question is linked to what some of the remarks that I've made. The case of Mr. Karen Mula, how far has that gone in terms of reaching resolution? Is he paying up? Some seminar issue, what actually the state of the, because I thought we congratulated the board last time for the good work you've done in cleaning up SA, because I mean most of those things that have been reported became KPMG, could not just be left like that shoved in the carpet. We congratulate. So we want to know now, the portfolio committee, how far has he complied with what he's supposed to do in terms of paying back to the state for all those careless and indiscreet expenses. That's number one. Number two, penetration into Africa. It's a very laudable move. And now I want to find out, there's a time, perhaps currently still the case, that one finds it, if one is going to take a circumlocutor's route to move from Joburg, you know, to one African country, one must go to Europe and come back, you know, in order to come back to that particular destination. Now, how have you overcome that circumlocutor's way of passing the path, of operating? Number two, it's linked to that is the question of the signals. It has brought to attention that some of the African airports do not have the signals, and that carries with a risk for aviation. Now, to what extent they upgraded their airports in order to obviate the risk of mid-air collisions and so on. And the last one, just a little financial one, we're very glad that you've repaid the subordinated loan of $1.5 billion to the state. And now that's the first subordinated loan. The second one is $1.3 billion. What is your prognosis? When do you think, how long do you think it will take you, you know, to repay that one? And we're impressed that you will actually repay the first one, as I said. But just want to know, how much time do you require in terms of your prognosis to repay the second one of $1.3 billion? Let me check this.
Thank you, Honorable Mukwena, Honorable Santo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to also follow on what other members have said, that the indication of this airline being financially viable is evident under your stewardship, CEO. And we would want to thank you for that, and also the current board. But really, and in all fairness and honesty, it does not absolve the airline from the crises and the problems that has enveloped it. I would want to, over and above, because I would listen to your responses in the plethora of questions that were raised, especially by Dr. Kwaronov. I had my questioning in that line. But let me go to human resources. The airline has historically been struggling to meet the employment equity targets. Some measures were designed to address that anomaly. How far is the airline in terms of addressing that? How far are you in relation to the Employment Equity Act? That is one issue. The second one would be the image of the airline has been negatively impacted on by baggage pilferage. That's a problem, really, that was raising eyebrows in every appearance of the airline delegation before Parliament. How successful are you in addressing that particular problem? Thank you very much, Honorable.
Thank you, Honorable Santo. Honorable Khalid.
Thank you, Chair. I'd also like to echo the sentiments of my colleagues in welcoming the new CEO. And certainly on the face of it, it seems that you've done a great job at turning around the airline financially. And it does seem to be on a road to recovery, which is great. What I want to ask, though, is it goes broader than the financials, because I think the financials are an important part of this. And clearly, we as a committee want to see SAA run as a profitable business. And I think that is an essential component that we expect from all SOEs. But we also expect something more from SOEs, because you're not just a private business. You are a state-owned enterprise. And the way that I would see you in terms of industrial policy directives is that you're a kind of essential upstream industry supplying essential inputs into our biggest industry in South Africa, which is tourism. And what we've always heard from the tourism market is that there's not enough airlift, there's not enough tourists coming into South Africa. And if we want to grow this industry, which has huge potential to grow, we have to look at the airline industry and have to look at the ways to bring more tourists in here. I'm just wondering, to what extent have you engaged with that particular issue, and what are your kind of solutions? I know SAA can't do it alone, but through your Star Alliance partners, have you been looking at various ways in which we can firstly reduce the price of airline tickets, particularly from long-haul destinations like the U.S., and have you also looked at ways in which we can get more airlift into South Africa, because I know there are sometimes problems with places at airports overseas. And in South Africa as well. Is this an issue that you've grappled with? Because this has a huge potential to grow our tourism industry and create jobs in South Africa.
Thank you, Honorable Khaling. Do you want to respond to these first questions, and then you'll follow with the next batch of questions?
Thank you very much. I'll try and see if I can just follow the order in which the questions were raised. But if I miss anything, I'm sure the rest of my colleagues will step in and add where necessary. I think on the first one, the question was that why are we not actually reporting against targets? And on that, I just wanted to refer you to page 28 and 29. And you will see that on page 28 and 29, we do actually report against the shareholders' compact and what the KPIs were on that. And I'm not in any way saying the way in which we formatted our report is as friendly as it could be. But however, I just wanted to show you that there is a section where we are reporting against KPI. The second issue was around, I mean, the emphasis of META and how far we've gone to try and resolve some of the issues that are highlighted in the emphasis of META. On the KPMG report, I think we have made some progress, and we reported quite extensively on that at the last at our last appearance to the portfolio committee. But I'm sure our chairperson and the member of the board would also be in a position to further add some of the additional action items that have been taken around that. On the other matters of emphasis, which relate to ATL and what we've done around that, that matter has already been resolved as we speak. So we have been able to provide the licensing council with the guarantee that they require. On the just taking them all one by one, on the competition issues, and maybe it also talks specifically to the FIFA World Cup complaint as well. I think on a lot of these matters, we are at the stage where we're waiting, awaiting feedback from the Competition Commission. We have matters which are under the South African jurisdiction, and then there are also international matters. Specifically on the international matters, we've been told that very shortly we will be receiving feedback on these matters. There was a requirement for us, I mean, to actually highlight these areas of concern. However, SAA is still of the view, especially when it relates to the matters which are international matters, that we do not believe that we would be found guilty, but we have to make room for the eventuality that we are found guilty or fined against these matters. So there's been a lot of work that's been done internally just for us to get a better understanding as to where we have areas of weakness. But most importantly, we've also focused on going forward as opposed to just the historical issues, because sometimes we have found that we fall foul on some of the competition issues simply because we haven't trained our people adequately to actually understand that in this new day and age, how you word an email is very different from how you would have been able to word it 10 years ago. So people think they're having a very simple discussion on day-to-day business, but you find that in terms of what they're actually discussing may actually fall foul of the competition rules as we speak today. So it is going to require a lot of work on our part, and we have been undertaking that work to ensure that people have a much better understanding and appreciation of some of these issues, and that they cannot actually continue to put the company at risk by having these type of discussions. So that's what, I mean, we're really looking to try and resolve going forward. Specifically on the FIFA World Cup complaint, again on that one, we're waiting for the Competition Commission to revert back to ourselves. We have provided them with all the necessary information that they requested, and our understanding is that they're going through that information to try and determine if indeed the complaint was valid or not. So we await the outcome of that investigation. Under the director's report and in specific reference to the A320 order, we make mention of the fact that the previous order was 15 aircraft, and we've now been able to negotiate 20 aircraft for more or less the same price that had initially been negotiated for the 15 aircraft. I think the important thing relating to this is, again, I mean, the history relating to this matter. There was a point when SAA thought that they had actually terminated this transaction, and a letter was actually sent to Airbus. But it subsequently transpired that actually Airbus did not understand SAA to have cancelled the order. And as such, SAA still had a huge obligation to meet what we had actually ordered in terms of these aircraft. So I think that in renegotiating and ending up with 20 aircraft versus 15 aircraft was really just a smart solution to get out or to improve what a contract that SAA could not get out of. And it was really a matter of saying, if we cannot get out of it, how do we further negotiate to actually get additional value out of the transaction? See, there's a question.
Yes, an interjection, Chairperson, sort of. Just to understand that you cancel a contract and the other party does not understand or does not take you as having cancelled the contract, how does this play? I would just want to be appraised on this one.
Well, it's a little bit unfortunate because all of us now are going to be talking secondhand as of being been there and obtaining first-hand information. But essentially what actually transpired is that SAA sent a letter to Airbus indicating that they were no longer keen on proceeding with the transaction. And they understood that to be the cancellation of the contract. Airbus understood it to be a notification that you say you're not interested, but you didn't specifically make reference to certain, say, clauses or whatever in terms of, you know, specifically on this, the contract has been cancelled. So, yes, they received the letter, but they expected SAA to follow up so that there would be a further discussion on to say, indeed, there is a final cancellation of the contract, and that didn't actually happen. So there was, a lot of confusion. At the point when SAA actually realized and still wanted to proceed with the cancellation of the contract, it actually transpired that it would cost SAA far more because SAA would lose on some of the prepayments that had already been made against these aircraft. So it was really that at that point, even post having advised that you then sit back and try to understand that if you're going to lose the prepayments and get nothing for that, that in itself could be problematic because huge amounts of money had already been placed as prepayments for the aircraft. At any rate, again, I guess from a business perspective, you also have to acknowledge...
I see a hand over there.
From a business perspective, you also have to acknowledge that SAA would have needed to take delivery of this aircraft anyway in terms of changing of the aircraft, which is why part of the renegotiated transaction was the postponement of the delivery of the aircraft because SAA did not have enough cash at that point in time to be able to make the repayments. So there were two things that were done. It was a renegotiation and getting more aircraft, but also the postponement on taking delivery of the aircraft.
Thank
you. Follow-up question.
It's a follow-up. I think what is we're really struggling to come to terms with here, and we can understand, you know, what you're telling us, but the part that's difficult to understand is how you get 20 aircraft for the price of 15, and it's further down the line because, you know, things go up and up and up. So I think that's the thing that certainly I'm grappling with, but I think we are trying to understand how you could, because, I mean, then, in future, perhaps this is the way we should do business, eh?
I think, it is a valid matter to raise, but you must also understand that because the in as much as it was very tough negotiations, it also allowed for SAA to also push hard from their side because it was a matter of saying, look, either this whole contract turns sour completely or the parties try to find a way of meeting each other halfway. I think also what was fortunate is that at that time when the renegotiations were taking place, as we would all be aware, obviously aircraft, you order them certain months before you take delivery at a particular price, at a particular exchange rate. So at that point when the renegotiations were taking place, there was a view that we could actually push for a lot more given what the state of the economy was at that point in time. But I think we were only allowed the ability to really strongly negotiate because it really had the potential. It was a face, let's be honest, probably a face-saving exercise on both parties because SAA stood to lose, but equally I think Airbus would have found themselves in a very difficult position as well.
Just a follow-up. I think you sum it up as a face-saving exercise, but we are under danger now of trying to negotiate a better path. We cannot do that.
Mm.
can I ask you, this order was originally placed in 2004. The delivery will only be in 2013. So don't we run the risk of really now buying older aircraft? And do you have an option to upgrade these aircraft, the A300, maybe to A390 or A321? Because we placed the order in 2004, we take delivery in 2014, technology will say to us, but you're buying older aircraft at a reduced price, but still, it's still in US dollars, it's a lot of money that we have to pay.
I think on that one, you know, really the people who renegotiated this contract really need to be congratulated, because they did think of that. And part of what was renegotiated was that we do have the ability, if necessary, to swap around, but within the amount of the order that has been placed. So for argument's sake, with our intentions to go onto the continent a lot more, I mean, going forward, we may have the ability to take an A321 as opposed to an A320. So there is that flexibility that has been catered for in this particular transaction, but we have to do it a number of months prior to the actual delivery date. So it would require us to do a lot of our work up front, which is at this point, in order to allow us that ability to swap. If I could then just continue with some of the questions. I think there was a question relating to the tickets for 2010, and that in terms of the information that you have, it refers only to the apparels that were bought. There were tickets that were bought for this tournament, tickets and obviously hospitality suites. And I thought that we had actually reported on this, because there was $23 million that was spent for this. And then on the Durban, Cape Town, maybe our friends, I mean, to make the point that possibly the learning for us out of the withdrawal of SAA, which is on the 1st of November, incidentally, it hasn't happened as yet, the learning for us is indeed we probably do need to make sure that we improve on the communication, because there seems to be a lot of confusion that has actually been caused by our withdrawal. I think it was a business requirement from our side, and as I already alluded to, essentially, I mean, SAA was not making money on the route, and we're making losses on the route. But more significantly, what we saw on that route specifically was that there was not very much appetite for business class. We have the lowest load factor in business class in our whole system on that route, which was roughly only about 6 people on any, and that's just an average, on any given day that utilized business class. Now, it clearly was an indication that there was a requirement more for the economy class seats as opposed to the business class seats. As SAA, we don't have the flexibility, unfortunately, with aircraft to say, now that we see that there's only 6 people who use business class, let's increase economy class and decrease business class. So really the option for us was to say, how do we try and match what we see as a market need by putting in something which would actually make sense, because you know, we need, as I said, to be able to fill the business class in order to cover our costs, because our operating costs are clearly much higher than you would find at Mango, for argument's sake. So that it was really driven from a business requirement that we needed to do that. In terms of whether there was a requirement for us to pull all 6 of the aircraft, I think the second part of our business case was more to say, if we're able to remove those aircraft from that route, it allows us the ability to be able to add frequency. And we have added frequency to Johannesburg, Durban, and to Johannesburg, Cape Town. So in terms of the airport itself, whilst we may not be flying from Cape Town to Durban, but we're increasing the frequency between Johannesburg and Durban into that airport. Obviously not to the same level in terms of additional 6 flights, but we are actually increasing our frequency. We're also increasing our frequency between Johannesburg and Cape Town. And this was also important because at some stage we pulled out a lot of capacity on those two routes in order to start growing to some of the regional routes. And we started to fall behind on those main markets. So that's what we're doing. And then additionally, obviously, starting new routes into the region, which we think is important. But as I said, I mean, again, I do want to acknowledge that from a communication perspective, and we noticed that from the type of questions that we're getting from people, that we probably, you know, could have done a lot more better in terms of how we communicated our withdrawal and what it actually means, I mean, to all of the passengers. On the matters, I mean, relating to the former CEO. Okay. Thank you. I follow up. I'm hearing everything that you're saying, but, you know, and we're talking about tourism here as well. Yeah, and I hear you about the business class. That does that apply to the economy class? And then, you know, can you not reduce those business class seats on the flights? You know, is there not another way of dealing with it? And can we have some factual figures from you as to, you know, what has led you to actually do this?
Okay.
I need to say we've got to face the people. You know, we're getting bombarded from people. You know, who are saying, "But no, what's going on here?" And we need to be able to have proper information to go to them.
I think, I mean, firstly, look, I made the point that, I mean, unfortunately, you know, with aircraft, you don't have the flexibility. They're not designed, I mean, to be able to reduce business class, I mean, overnight. It would require, I mean, to actually put the aircraft down, and you also don't want to change the configuration of your aircraft for one route, because the aircraft don't operate only to that route. In order to ensure proper utilization, an aircraft would operate between Cape Town, Durban, but would also be operating just between Johannesburg and Cape Town as well. So that obviously becomes a challenge, I mean, for us. But I think that the thing that needs to be said is that in terms of the total number of seats that have been pulled out of the route, you know, the offering was 22,000 seats, I mean, previously, I mean, which is now, I mean, before SAA withdraws. And basically, those will be reducing to 21,000 and something seats. So there will only be a reduction of 632 seats in terms of economy seats in the market. So I think that people may be a little bit unsure in terms of when we say we're pulling out, is there anything that's replacing the frequency? And essentially, all we're doing is that it reduces down to 632 because Mango will increase their frequencies between Cape Town and Durban. In terms of factual information as to what would have led us to pull off the route, essentially we're talking about an over 100 million loss, I mean, for SAA on the route annually currently. So from a business perspective, you would understand, yes. So, as I said, I mean, really on the matter relating to the former CEO, I don't think... Could somebody please remind me? I can't remember what was the matter, or else I'll ask one of my other colleagues to actually deal with that. Maybe then just to move to the Africa...
Just the retrieval of the money. You paid up. That's the essence of the question. You're paying up.
No, I mean, I think the response to that is that the matters are still, I mean, all of the cases that the criminal and civil cases have been lodged with the respective authorities, so we have to wait and see what the outcome of that is. But it's still early days. And then on the Africa penetration and whether you still have a situation where you find yourself having to fly to Europe first before you can come back to South Africa, mm-hmm. It is still the case. And that is precisely why, as SAA, we believe that we can do a lot more in terms of partnering up with other carriers in the region to try and improve the situation. I made mention in the presentation that we are looking for various partnerships both in Central Africa and West Africa, and it's precisely to address that. Because the problem is not normally to the larger markets in each of those towns, but the problem is more the smaller, I mean, destinations around, I mean, those areas. So we are trying to see if we can work with local partners that can feed into a central point, which would then, jointly with SAA, then we can then bring the passengers down to South Africa in order to try to address that. So our focus is not just the trunk routes, but it's really just to say how do we grow the intra-Africa penetration as well. And the signals and whether, I mean, how we're dealing with mid-air, I mean, collisions, I think that the challenge will still remain in the continent. the value, though, that SAA has is that in terms of the technology that we have on our aircraft, at least it helps us, I mean, to avoid some of those things. So we have ensured that, especially on the aircraft that we operate to the region, we have the technology to try and cut down on any possibility of this actually occurring. On the subordinated zone and what the timelines are on that, I would hate, I mean, to commit at this point in time, but it is something that we'd like to be able to work towards repaying sooner rather than later. Again, it will depend on how we're able to continue to grow our sustained earnings. So all of these things are interlinked one way or another. On the human resources employment equity targets, I will ask my colleague to speak specifically to how we've done. But just to mention that the challenge, I mean, for the airline has always been in mainly two areas, and that's really in the pilot area and in the technical area. On the pilot side, we are going to be reintroducing our cadet program because I think we cancelled that some time back. So that's coming back on board to ensure that we begin to train pilots to address some of the equity requirements. On the technical side, we have successfully been running an apprenticeship program, and I think in the last year, just tend to be corrected, I think we trained roughly about 200. But in total, in terms of the number of people that were employed, about 200. So that one is ongoing, and I think we are beginning to see some positive results out of the technical apprenticeship program. On the baggage pilferage, indeed, I mean, it is an area of concern and continues to be an area of concern. Without sounding as if, one continues to make excuses, the challenge with this one always is going to be the fact that it's not only one player that's involved, but there are a number of players that are involved. But I think that the communication between all the role players has definitely improved in the last couple of months, so we're working very closely with the airports company and our ground handling companies to ensure that we try and reduce this. What we did find quite interesting was that during the World Cup period in July, pilferage was next to zero, which was quite interesting. But we've checked that, and apparently, it is normally an international phenomenon because at that time, that's what normally happens. But I think for me, exactly, it might be that they went holiday, but the issue is that if we're able to reduce it to those levels during that period, that means it is possible to reduce it. And we just need to figure out how else, we can focus on that. Yeah. And then on SOE and our role beyond just being a profit-earning entity and what our role is specifically around the ALIS strategy and bringing additional people into the country. I think for us, it is an important item. And in fact, even in our planning, going into the future, we make specific reference to what our support will be with regard to the ALIS strategy. And we have been having discussions. In fact, I think a few weeks ago I was here attending a MINMAC with the tourism department in order to address some of the challenges that we see. And I think the thing that needs to be said, and has probably been acknowledged as well by the Department of Tourism, is that indeed people will tell you that the reason why they would fly to a country is that they have to see value for money. But value for money is not only airlines. It's got to be a combination of not only the airline fare, but what they pay as well when they get here. Because we continuously review what we charge as airlines in comparison to other destinations which are long-haul destinations such as Europe, maybe to Brazil, and you would find that in terms of what we charge, for a fare perspective, we are actually quite competitive. So it's going to have to be more of a joint effort and not looking at it purely from an airline perspective. And at the same time, if you look from a bilateral perspective, today airlines can basically come in anytime, anywhere in South Africa, so there's lots of services. But SAA is still the one that's responsible for bringing roughly about 35% of the arrivals to South Africa. So we are playing a significant role in terms of bringing passengers in. And we have not stopped people from coming into the environment. I think the bilateral regime in South Africa is such that it allows people to come in. So it's definitely not A-lift. It's got to be far more than just A-lift that helps to bring tourism And the only way we're going to resolve it is to have a better understanding as to what else we need to do to actually support that.
Thank you very much for responding to that set of questions. I think I've got three more members that need to ask questions before I come in also and ask my questions as well. Can you do justice to that one, CEO?
Thank you, CEO. As far as the transformation is concerned and with relate to human resources, we're very, very mindful of the fact that we need to transform our employee component to make sure that we are representative of the demographics of the country. We're making progress, and it's as we stand, it is a really work in progress. The initiatives that we have, we're looking at internship programs in all aspects of airline-specific business. We're looking at the graduate programs. We're looking at building capacity for scarce and critical skills, that is airline-specific skills. We are forging partnerships. We're going to be concluding a partnership with Airbus, and we are exploring a partnership with JetBlue in terms of looking at the core skills required in the airline industry. I will give you just the stats of where we stand now. At the leadership level, as we stand on the 30th of September, we have about 57% of the leadership being ACI, meaning that it's African colors and Indian. We also have the same percentage being female representatives on the executive. So that's where we stand in terms of the steps currently in our leadership component. In the cadet pilot, as the CEO mentioned, that we are looking at reintroducing our cadet pilot program. We also have forged a partnership with South African Air Force, where by first quarter of next year, they're going to be supplying us with 15 cadets that they've trained in the Air Force that we will then put into our system and start training them on our ab initio training and then get them onto our completion of becoming fully-fledged commercial pilots. And all of them, 100%, the 15, are all of them ACI. So that just indicates the focus. This year we have employed 15 pilots, and 7 of the 15 is ACI. And we are waiting, at the moment we've already done the assessment.
What is ACI?
Africans, colors, and Indians.
Oh.
We also have 9 in waiting that we've...
Anybody but one.
No. I mentioned that 7 of the 15, I'm just responding to African colors and Indian because the question is about how we're transforming. And 7 of the 15 is African colors and Indians, meaning that the rest of them is either white women or white males. I have already assessed, we have 9 who are ready to be employed that we will engage next year, pilots, of which all of them are Africans, colors, and Indians. As far as our apprentice program is concerned, we have trained over 200 apprentices, and in the 2009 intake, of 36 of those have been now completed the training and are now being employed. And all 36 of them are African, colors, and Indian.
Just on cadets, there is that story. I'm sure people have read about it, about this cadet that something happened on her. Do you know that?
My apologies, I'm not aware.
I think you are confusing with the Transnet or with Santo. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's Transnet, yeah. Honorable members, I think justice has been done to your questions.
I will
now
follow up.
Honorable Nana. Okay.
Thanks, Shabazin. Shabazin, I know I'm not the brilliant person around this house, but around this room. But I have gone through the annual report. All what the lady has just told us, I couldn't either find it in the presentation by FAA, nor in the annual report. And I'm saying to CEO, unless you say your HR transformation things are in page so-and-so, I've gone to the annual report, it's not there. And if it's not there, why? Because to some of us, it's critically important that such information, you know, is properly interrogated, and we know, we understand the direction at which your entity is going.
I see another question. Follow up.
Going back to my first question, do you have a strategic plan? SAA strategic plan, and do you publish that? Then I would suggest, Chairperson, that in future, when you come to the annual report, normally what we do is to measure against your strategic plan and combine it with a budget. And I don't find it in this report that you report against your strategic plan. It's a point Mr. Nana is raising. Measurements against your strategic plan coupled with a budget for the portfolio committee to oversee the effective operation of the SAA. So I would strongly suggest that in future you consider to have a more comprehensive annual report. In the fourth parliament, the tendency is to have more information rather than less information. If you look at the recent Transnet annual report, the ESCOM annual report, it's over 300 pages. But it's sufficient information presented to Parliament to oversee, to ask questions, to understand, to defend, and I think the tendency is towards more information rather than minimalistic. And I would seriously ask SAA to consider in the following years to report more comprehensively and give more information to Parliament, so that we can have effective oversight. For instance, all the
to Dr. Kornoff and Mr. Nana, your sequence has been disturbed now because follow-up, because the follow-ups tend to be taking precedence now over the members who have not asked questions.
I'm very sorry for that, honorable member. Let me go back to that sequence of questions, because now there's too much follow-ups and all that. I want to recognize Honorable Van Dijk and then Honorable Van Dalen.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the chance to ask a question. Chairperson, yes, it's been said in the presentation that routes to countries in Africa are part of your core business, and that it also plays a major role in your turnover. I would like to ask the question, can you inform this committee about your risk management should it happen that other airlines start to compete with SAA on these routes to Africa? Say, for instance, if it should happen that one time Galula or Comair start to compete on those routes, what plans are in place? So that you can still carry on with your routes on a profitable basis and on the price of the business as it is right now. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Van Dijk. Honorable Van Dijk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask a question about labor, and I mean, if I had the chance, then it wouldn't have been necessary. I wanted to know why the numbers of the employees are not in here. How many employees are in there? Usually what I do, I check how much you spend $5 billion on or $4 billion on employment benefits, and then we divide it and we see that either they are paid well or they're not. We can't do that here because you don't make mention of your employees in your report. And then the other is the onerous contracts that you have. You have onerous contracts, and in this report you talk about them on page number 48, and you say these are contracts that legacy issues that you have to pay. It's costing you more to have to abide by these contracts than what you what it's costing you. What, you know, the people have a contract, and it's costing more than less than cost price to service those contracts. Now, in the new accounting standards, you have to account for the future loss of that. I don't find that here. So can you please point it out to me how much those onerous contracts is budgeted for in this annual financial statement? And then I wanted to know this accommodation and refreshment. Is that where your flights are cancelled? I see it's about 740 million rand, and for the company it was 1 billion rand. So I want to know, is this, what is this accommodation, and is it for the employees of SAA, or is it where flights are cancelled and you have to look after the customers, feed them and put them up in hotels? Is that what it is? And then I was contacted by the Portuguese people, and they talk about the same thing as what you have alluded to, is where they have to fly to London and then back to Madeira. Is there no problem of possibility of having one flight that actually once a month or once a week lands there somewhere, so that those people can actually don't have to fly 500-600 kilometers back? It just seems, just drop them off at the stop and keep going. One flight, soos die melktrein was, jy weet, vroeger jare. That's a nice one, Honorable Van Dalen. Yeah. Honorable Nana.
Thanks, Shepperson. The first one, Shepperson, would be, there's a saying that one man's poison is another man's meat. One man's meat is another man's poison. I understand that, SAA has been losing business class passengers. But, as a person who travels in economy class myself, of late I've been upgraded more than ever before. I've been traveling in business class quite lately. There are some empty spaces and I can find my way into the business class. I'm not complaining. They may complain, I'm not complaining. Yeah. My first question, Chairperson, it's in fact not a question, but I want to emphasize on a point that was raised by Dr. Koronov and subsequently raised by myself, that I think it's not sufficient for FAA to give us information, particularly as it relates to transformation in the SOE. In the manner in which we have been given, we couldn't find it anywhere in whichever documents that they've given to us. And with your permission, I want to suggest you will have timelines if the committee agrees. I would suggest that SAA must provide those figures in writing. It's a matter that you can take up, Shepperson, yourself. The questions, Shepperson, would then be. Our government has already indicated that we are not in a position to provide any further capitalization for FAA. And FAA is talking about a renegotiated deal with the Airbus company. How are they planning to finance this in the light of an indication from government? And the second one, Shepperson, would be on SA Technical. During our oversight in 2009, O.R. Tambo International Airport, this matter was raised, and I have again read about it in the newspapers, that plans were afoot to sell a substantial stake of SA Technical to foreign investors. Basically, I think it's majority shares of the company, basically making it foreign owned. May I check with SAA whether this is true, how far is it, and what's the basis? Because the last time in our oversight, we were told of how good the company was doing and how critical it was in the operations of SAA, and yet we now hear that it's being sold to foreign investors. Those would be my two questions, I think.
Thank you, Honorable Nana, for those questions. Maybe I could also add two more questions from my side. The first one being on your gearing ratio in terms of percentage. What is your gearing ratio in terms of percentage? Because if it's above 50%, it means that you are in the red. Of which Transnet, of course, is about 38.5%. That would be the first one. The second one is on the financials, actually, in that with the strong rand, we all know that it's affecting so many industries in this country, especially the exports. Now, with the airline industry, particularly yourself, how is it affecting you, the strong rand? I think that would be my two questions. Honorable members. Over to you, SEO.
Maybe just to start off by responding to the previous questions. I think that in response to the information that is lacking in the annual report that we presented to yourself today, the only comment that I can make is really just to say the point is noted and we will ensure that we improve on some of the reporting going forward. We do have a strategic plan, and in fact, that's what the board and DPE would also ensure that they monitor our performance against. And I think that, you know, we need to try and bring in some of that information into the annual report. So the point is taken. I really cannot have, I mean, any excuses whatsoever to say why is the information not in, but we acknowledge the areas of improvement that we still need to effect in terms of our annual report. Then the other issue was the onerous contract. Oh, the gentleman has left. And that it is not actually highlighted specifically in terms of what is the cost of those contracts in the annual report. I think the point to make here is that unlike other organizations, here we're not talking about contracts or large contracts. I think it was more of a general statement in terms of the number of contracts that we find, which, quite frankly, if we had the ability to renegotiate today, we would be able to get much more value or reduced payments against those contracts. But it's not as if we're talking about two or three large significant contracts. We're really talking about that there are a number of contracts of differing value, but which all add up, which is why we wanted to make the point from a transparency perspective that we do find ourselves challenged with some of these contracts that are in our system. So that is the issue there. On the route to Africa and the risk management, if the other carriers actually come to the route, I think the response is that we are already finding that carriers such as Onetime have started to enter the market. Onetime has started operating between Johannesburg and Maputo, which was a route which for a number of years the only carrier that operated was South African Airways. To some extent, you know, especially with some of the surrounding, I mean, areas, I think we have done a review of that and what the potential impact would be on our operations. And at this stage, we are comfortable that SAA would still be able to generate the levels of returns that we have been generating, because these markets are growing, and in fact they do require additional capacity to these markets. What is of a greater risk to us is more the international carriers coming into the region. That is much more of a higher risk to us. And the only way we can actually respond is to be able to offer the type of frequency that people require in this destination in order to try and limit anybody else coming into the market. And what I mean by that is that, quite frankly, if you're only offering one or two frequencies per week, it does actually allow for other international carriers to see the opportunity to come into the continent and offer some of those services. And then we fall behind. So hence, you know, the focus for us going forward is just ensuring that we are actually meeting the full requirements of the market. Because for as long as we're not meeting the requirements of the market, we are going to have more and more people look to go onto the continent. So really, in short, I think our biggest challenge we see are more the international carriers. And that if we don't respond and respond quickly to that, we do stand quite a huge risk in relation to that. In terms of the hotel costs, those hotel costs are for our crew, so pilots and cabin crew, because when they fly, obviously, we have to put them up. We also need to pay an S&T for whatever number of nights that they're away from home. So that's what is actually contained there. Obviously, a small amount of that would also be when we are actually required to accommodate the passengers, but the bulk of that amount relates to accommodation and costs relating to our crew. The Portuguese operation, much as we would like to be able sometimes to offer one or two frequencies, I think it's always very difficult for a scheduled operation to do that because the aircraft are already allocated to other destinations. So it becomes very difficult, you know, to be, you know, able to say, you know, once a week and so forth, we're offering services to a particular destination. And then, okay. And then on the financing of the aircraft and how we intend to finance those aircraft, I think I did mention upfront that what was done already was to test the appetite of some of the financing houses to see whether they would be keen to provide us with financing for these aircraft in the absence of a guarantee. And we've been quite surprised. And maybe it's because of the market conditions right now, we're not sure, but we've had a number of people that have actually registered an interest to try and finance the aircraft. Now, clearly from our side, we need to decide, because I don't think as SAA we will take all of those aircraft onto our balance sheet. Some of them, we will have to split them up and ensure that maybe we're going into buy and lease back options. And others, I mean, obviously we'll be trying to see if it can be an outright, I mean, purchase in order for them to reflect on the balance sheet. So we're going to have to weigh up, I mean, all of those various options. But I think the key issue is that there are financing houses that have actually indicated an interest to support the transaction. On SA Technical, I'm not too sure about if there was a recent article that still talks about selling off of the stake, because there is no intention to sell off, I mean, SA Technical. What was actually talked about, and which remains something that we continuously review, was whether there would be any value in bringing in a strategic equity partner into the SA Technical environment. But if you refer back to the presentation I made earlier on, I made the point that at this point in time, our focus is in trying to ensure that we grow SA Technical onto the continent. If, as whatever work we continue to do in SA Technical, we believe that there will be additional value that we derive from bringing strategic equity partners, that would be something that we would look at. But at this point in time, that's not, I mean, anything that we're looking towards. So I'm not too sure where these reports actually come from, because for us, we are more focusing on growing SA Technical going forward. And then there was a question on our gearing ratio in terms of percentage. So actually, it's true. We are sitting with a gearing ratio of 88%, and the industry for airlines is normally around 65%. So we still clearly have a long way to go before we're in a position where we say we're comfortable and we can compare favorably with what the market is doing. On the strong rand, I mean, would affect tourism, because obviously South Africa as a destination is no longer as cheap as what people would have seen, because our rand is strong. But then on the flip side for the airline, because all of our payments are in US dollars, we are also seeing some benefit from that. So it's both sides. I hope I've actually addressed all of the questions. I believe I have.
Yeah, I think we've addressed all the questions, not unless members have got other follow-up questions to ask, except to say that you need to provide the committee with the employment equity profile that Honorable Nana over there requested. Honorable members, is there any other member who wants to make a follow-up? Because at 4 o'clock, this meeting is going to be adjourned. Honorable Bowman, Honorable Santo.
Thank you. I just have another very quick one, and that is relating to vacancies, particularly of your strategic strategic positions. Have those all been filled? Do you still have a couple of those that are a problem?
We have more or less filled all of the vacancies. Most of the people, or at least the last batch of people are coming through, for example, SA Technical, it was a vacant position, and we have been successful in finding somebody to fill that position, and the gentleman starts with SAA on the 1st of November. So come the 1st of November, most of our strategic positions, I mean, will be filled, except for one, which is a cargo position, but even that, we've already been able to find a successful candidate for that position as well, and they move across to that position effective from the 1st of December. So by the end of this year, there will be no vacancies anymore. We're stopping all of... We've decided not to be a drama school anymore and have too many actors.
Who was next? Honorable Santa and Honorable Corbin.
Thank you very much, Chair. As a matter of interest, was it deliberate not to share more information on the KPMG forensic report because it lacks a lot of detail that would have made a person to read with understanding? One would conclude that you are still sitting with the thing and the people that are involved, that were involved or that were mentioned in the report are still in your employ or without anything having been done to them. I'm not saying we should, I'm sure there could be cases where you need not to mention names and in some cases perhaps might be subjudice, I don't know. Yeah. But I'm not driving you into that, but it lacks qualitative information that would make a reader to understand.
Thank you, Honorable Santo. Honorable Coronel.
Just a last question. Where do you, what is this, how much did you pay for consultants in this period of your annual report, and is it reported? Maybe you can refer to the page number. And what is the tendency? Have you increased your spending on consultants or decreased it, and did you get value for money?
Thank you, Honorable Koronov. I see Honorable Van Delen. You wanted to make a follow-up question. No, unfortunately, I was not here when they answered my question, so I will not follow up anything because I might just get it wrong. So, and I must pay for my sin for doing that. Okay. Thanks for that honor. So I had to vent my frustration from being last first outside. Over to you.
If I could answer, it is on page 54, the external audit fees. Is shown separately as required by disclosure. Internal audit fees was 26, shown under professional fees, and the rest of the consultant fees was 52. 51 actually rounded off.
51.
It's on page 54.
So that is a sort of information that we need more in detail.
Mm.
Professional fees, management, technical, internal, but it doesn't state what for what consultancies it was used.
Mm.
That's a detail that a committee like this would like to interrogate you with, and to have a tendency and so forth. So now I raise my question.
Do you want to respond to that?
No, I think the point is taken once again, but I think your follow-up was, are we actually increasing or decreasing? And I think at this point I can actually confidently say that we're definitely decreasing, and we'll see that next year, especially when we give the details in terms of the comparison versus what has been paid this year versus what will be paid next year. On the KPMG report, I think the short response is that actually it is true. It was quite deliberate because at this stage we would not want to actually reveal too much of to more information than what has already been indicated in the report until all of these matters have been finalized. But just to give you the assurance that, especially in terms of the internal people that were implicated, that there is action that is currently underway.
Any further questions, honourable members? I think this.
Chairperson.
Honourable Nana.
There was a first question by Mr. Van Dalen, which you said we will attend to it.
Oh.
Last.
Oh yeah. The reason why I did not want to entertain that one earlier on is because it was a bit, you know, there were too many questions, so I had to take it last. Do you still want a response, Honourable?
I'd like to respond to it.
Okay.
Normal accounting, from a company point of view, there's transactions between companies, intercompanies, at a group level is eliminated. So you'd find that there would be transactions that's eliminated, and it actually adds up to the 116 that was eliminated between the companies at a group level.
Well, I don't believe it.
It's a consolidation adjustment that would normally
happen. I think it's a misrepresentation, and I don't believe it anyway, so...
It's consolidation adjustment that happens at a group level.
Do you want any written response to that, Honourable Van Dalen?
No, it's like running a race, and when you stop, you're halfway through the race, then you not want to finish it. I will just believe what I will believe, and then I will act accordingly. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable
Bowman. Yeah, I think on a point of order, I found that actually quite offensive in a meeting like this, because I think we're casting aspersions on what is printed in here, and I think they have been explaining how, you know, and sometimes if we don't quite grasp the finances and how it works, then you know it. It's problematic to accuse people of printing something incorrectly here.
Mm.
I think we need to ask the Honourable Member to withdraw that.
Quite frankly, I think it is true. Honourable Van Dalen, we were presented with a report here, and we have to ask questions based on the report itself, not outside the report. So what you're saying, actually, it sounds to some of us like an accusation of some kind, or that maybe they're trying to hide something, of which there is a report, there is a presentation before us, and will you please kindly withdraw your statement?
Mr. Chair, like I said in the beginning, it's like running a race. When you are stopped midway through it, I mean, you don't feel like finishing the race. I was asking a question, and it was about the profit and what they had represented in their presentation here. And I said that they had only represented all the companies that made a profit and not the ones that made a loss. And I still stand by it. I mean, that is what I believe happened here. So you want me to say sorry for believing that, or sorry that I don't have the accounting standards to understand it and everybody else does?
Saying that, Honourable Van Dalen, but if you want more information on this, I think SAA is free to apply with some kind of written response to that, because it seems as if you're not satisfied with the response, Honourable.
I don't know if this is going to help. Your audit, SAA, did you have a qualified audit or unqualified audit?
Okay.
So I suppose that will help Mr. Van Dalen. Thank you very much.
Let me thank the SAA for coming in, presenting us with their annual report. And thank also the honourable members. Thank everybody for attending this very important meeting today. This meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.
are you?
Okay, that guy now, he wants to go to the Select Committee on Appropriation.
Yeah.
He said that he do have documents, so he would be pleased if maybe the PM remember can ask him to put it on there.
I keep forgetting to get a new.
No matter, you ask to put it on this one because it can be a you can use it.
But one is a form of
paracord. I form of paracord.
Okay, cool.
Because sometimes those documents are too big to be emailed, you know.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have a problem at all to give it to us.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, because the guy who was in the meeting the following day, he got everything for you and also for him as
okay.
well.
Yeah, I think now
the Baba. Thank you.
that. Bye-bye.